ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय स राजा महिषीं राजन् सुष्णातां रुचिराननम् कृतस्वस्यायनां तृप्तम् अभ्यनन्दारूपागतम्. Translation: The queen took her bath and dressed herself nicely with all auspicious garments and ornaments. After taking food and becoming completely satisfied, she returned to the king. Upon seeing her beautifully decorated, attractive face, the king welcomed her with all devotion. Srila Prabhupada's purport in a minute. A woman is generally accustomed to dress herself nicely with fine garments and decorative ornaments. She may even sometimes wear flowers in her hair. Women especially dress themselves up in the evening, because the husband comes home in the evening after working hard all day. It is the duty of the wife to dress herself up very nicely so that when her husband returns, he becomes attracted by her dress and cleanliness and thus becomes satisfied. In other words, the wife is the inspiration of all good intelligence. Upon seeing one's wife dressed nicely, one can think very soberly about family business. When a person is too anxious about family affairs, he cannot discharge his family duties nicely. A wife is therefore supposed to be an inspiration and should keep the husband's intelligence in good order so that they can combinedly prosecute the affairs of family life without impediment. So, it's unusual to hear these kinds of things in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Actually, this, you know, if we go backtrack to this entire story, this whole analogy, ultimately it's talking about something quite the opposite, right? Narada Muni's instructing King Prachinabharishat, and so he comes up with this analogy of King Paranjana. And it's a complicated story, and it goes on for a long time in the Bhagavatam. It's even confusing. You forget who's who. The queen is what? Is the queen the intelligence, or is the queen a woman? But anyway, the reason that this story is being told is because Narada Muni wants to make sure that King Prachinabharishat doesn't waste his life. He sees that that's a good possibility because he's got everything he wants, right? The king. So if you have everything you want, if you were so fortunate, if you had a nice warm temple room, so many things you might want, there's a chance that you might become attached to it, you might become really attached to it, and you might consider yourself to be an enjoyer. Anyway, Narada Muni thought this may happen to this king, so he decided to instruct him ultimately on the principles of renunciation. But in the course of this whole narration, our acharyas, they divert in so many ways to give, let's say, supplementary advice on so many different topics. this is unusual, but it's in the Bhagavatam, right? It's talking about women dressing themselves nicely. So what's that got to do with renunciation, right? He's telling a story about renunciation. Now we're talking about dressing up so that when the husband sees you, he's really happy. Especially if one is thinking in terms of brahmachari life. I don't know, on this side I see some kind of a section of orange. Any lifelong committed brahmacharis? You know that Prabhupada, he gives, well, not just Prabhupada, but in our teachings there are the two categories of brahmachari, right? The Naishtika Brahmachari, who makes a very serious commitment that this is it for life, I'm Brahmachari. And then there's the alternative, the temporary Brahmachari. And there's a term for it, I can't even remember what the term is, Upa Kuvani or something like that. Anyway, temporary Brahmachari, where one thinks, okay, for a certain period of my life, I'm going to be celibate, but only for a certain period. And then I'll take on household life. Kardama Muni was one such brahmachari, you could say. Highly advanced, right? In the context of his practice, highly advanced personality. Obviously highly advanced because Lord Vishnu himself came to see him. But at some point in his meditation, Kardama Muni thought, it's time for me to get married. I want a wife. So he's brahmachari. There's no question he's advanced. But at some point he's thinking, now I want to get married. So coincidentally, while he's thinking like that, maybe not a coincidence, at some point, Lord Vishnu appears before him. And the nice part of this story there is how after Kardama Muni offers some prayers, he doesn't tell him what I want, just offers prayers to the Lord. And the nice thing is that Lord Vishnu, Krishna, we can say, says, I know what you want. And in fact, I've already arranged it for you. Now, in the purport there, Prabhupada says some very amazing things that are, again, seem unusual. He says, Krishna is always happy to satisfy the material desires of his devotees. I saw it in black and white. So, Krishna's anxious, happy to satisfy the material desires of his devotees. Because later on in the Bhagavatam, he says, the first installment of my mercy is I take away what he's got. And he's attached to something, my devotee, I want to do him a favor, I take it away. And there's so many stories like that. Practical stories in everyday common devotees' lives where Krishna takes away some attachment, either subtle attachment or even gross attachment. And as a conditioned soul, we resent the fact that Krishna does it. But when we look back, we think, that was so much mercy that Krishna helped me in that way and get rid of that attachment. But anyway, in Kardama Muni's case, he says, or in the purport there, Prabhupada said, he loves to fulfill the material desires of his devotees. And of course, then Prabhupada advises, the whole point of that advice is that whatever the case may be, better to pray to Krishna than to find some other. Because if even Kardama Muni was thinking, you know, now it's time for me to get married, then what to speak of anybody else. In that section also, Prabhupada describes different types of marriages, most of which are not recommended in Kali Yuga, right? He mentions that, I'm not even sure what he means by Gandharva marriage, but anyway, he says Gandharva marriage. And he says, marriage by love. So marriage by love is not recommended in Kali Yuga. Kidnapping your wife is not recommended in Kali Yuga. Krishna did it, but if we do that, then we may end up in prison. You couldn't kidnap your wife. So it's not recommended in Kali Yuga. When he says marriage by love, I assume he's talking about what they refer to as common law marriage, where you just, two people decide, okay, we'll just move in together and we'll call it marriage. So this happens a lot, but this is also not recommended in Kali Yuga. The first class marriage, this is also an interesting point since we're on the topic of marriage. The first class marriage is described like this. That normally you think if the prospective groom, if he goes to the father and he asks permission, I want to marry your daughter. But that's not actually first class. Because in the case of Kardama Muni, he sat there after the visit of Lord Vishnu. When Lord Vishnu left, what did Kardama Muni hear? Does anybody know? I'll give you a hint. Yes, so what does he hear when Garuda's... Yes, the Vedic hymns. He heard this beautiful music when Lord Vishnu left, Garuda's wings. So after he left, he had the promise, I'm getting a wife. I don't know how. Swayambhuva Manu, the emperor, not just a king, but the king of kings, the emperor, Manu, came there. And what did he do? He offered his obeisances to Kardama Muni. So the social order was intact, right? The king knew that I've got all the money, he's got nothing, but he's superior to me. So the king understood that money doesn't mean you're at the top of the social order. So he offered obeisances. And then he begged him. He said, can you please take my daughter in marriage? Kardama Muni didn't say, I know you've got a beautiful daughter and I'm interested. He waited. So he was offered. And she wasn't just average beautiful, because there is a place in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says how you take the most beautiful woman in the material world, and to the demigods, she's like a which amphibious creature? Frog. That's the description. So there are on the packages of bindis, I don't know if you've, probably the brahmacharis haven't seen it, but on the packages of bindis, I've seen because I have young daughters, there's a picture of the model who's advertising the bindis. She's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So you think that, and that's a frog by the estimation of the demigods, then what is beauty if she's a frog? So, but in the case of Devahuti, and not Devahuti, yeah, Devahuti was his daughter. In the case of Devahuti, there's a description that, oh, this is what Kardama Muni says to Swayambhuva Manu, that I've heard the story of the demigod, I can't remember his name, Vaivas, anyway, a Gandharva, who saw Devahuti and was stunned and just, you know, fell out of his airplane. I don't know if he was injured, not injured, that is not, but he was stunned by her beauty. So we can imagine then, well, we can't imagine, but so she was extraordinarily beautiful, being offered to this sage. And so he recited that story. And Swayambhuva Manu told him, now I'm offering her to you, and if you don't accept, then you may have to ask somebody else. And that's where Prabhupada said, that's second class marriage. if you have to ask. So, and it's auspicious for a grihastha with a daughter to ask somebody to marry his daughter. Anyway, this is just the descriptions in the Bhagavatam that I'm talking about. Different types of marriage. So, why would these things even be brought up at all? Right? In Srimad Bhagavatam especially, things about women dressing themselves beautifully and helping the husband. Nothing is mentioned in the Bhagavatam unless it's actually critical to our lives, unless it's part of the technique of spiritual advancement. Not one speck of ink is wasted if it's not meaningful to us in our lives and our practice in Krishna consciousness. So when we see these instructions, depending on our ashram, our position in life, but somehow we see that, or we have to know, just like we heard this morning, Prabhupada's, what he credited his success to, that he had faith in the words of his spiritual master. Simple reduction to that principle, that whatever he's saying is invaluable, important, not important, critical, must be. So here we have something that, how am I supposed to even care about this? Right? The woman dresses herself beautiful, and so the husband is happy when he comes home. What's that got to do with Krishna consciousness? Well, we can think of it in different ways, but like we heard yesterday, man has certain nature, woman has certain nature. If we can take it a simple way like that, she likes to dress up, and I don't care about dressing up. Okay. But I think that's superficial. And more importantly, we have to understand that even our acharyas are concerned with happy, productive, successful grihastha life. There's no other explanation. Why would they even enter into the topic? So you can ask why six Goswamis of Vrindavan, what is their interest in such topics? Because their interest is that every conditioned soul in the material world gets back to Godhead somehow or another. And statistically, it is simply a fact of human society that whatever it is, 10% of the population are authentic brahmachari. Which means, for one thing, that the other 90% should understand that they're a very honorable section of society. If it's only 10% that are able to embrace that lifestyle, then they're, genuinely to be honored. That's for sure. But anyway, as far as the other 90%, they're not left out, right? It's not as if they don't get to go back to Godhead. So what we understand from these things is that there is a dignified relationship between male and female in a marriage relationship, which allows both parties to make serious spiritual advancement, right? Therefore, we call it an ashram where all possibility for, what to speak of happiness, all possibility for getting out of the material world, for going back to Godhead, is there. And so if that is the case, then some description of what is a good grihastha ashram, successful grihastha ashram, is there. And some of the superficial elements, we may say, for example, you see the wedding ceremony where the person rides on the horse and he has the big turban and the girl's dressed in red, just heavy with jewelry. Or in Western traditions, she's wearing a flowing white gown like that. Superficial things. In ISKCON, we can combine the two so she's not wearing red and she's not wearing white. So she would be wearing pink, right? Combination. Sorry. Okay, anyway. These things have some role in society. And the role is that Buddha is the great Hasta Ashram. It's about raising children who have an opportunity to become servants of Krishna. Really. And in order to do that, then that means that the husband and wife have to be Krishna conscious. They have to be happy. Right? Children see some situation which is not happy, then they're not so attractive. So, anyway, that's what I take out of it. That we have these kind of purports about dressing nicely. Of course, in wintertime, we don't see it so much, right? Everybody looks the same. Just one big bundle of clothes. It's hard to tell who's the man, who's the woman. But in normal times, it is a fact that the women like to dress up nicely. And the men, they honor those women. They don't think, oh, here's something for my sense enjoyment. They honor those women. This is some potential candidate to assist me in my progress back to Godhead. So, like that. It's to help us develop good attitudes, good healthy attitudes towards marriage institution that these things are described. And ultimately, Kardama Muni, in his case, he made one condition. He said, yes, I'm going to do it, but when it's all over, I still want to go back to Godhead. I still want to be a renunciate in some capacity or another. That was one of his conditions, right from the very beginning. We know Priyavrata, he said, not at all. He really had to be twisted in order to get married at all. But same thing, his condition was, okay, but when it's done, I still get to go back to Godhead, don't I? I still get to. I don't lose anything by this. And so he was promised, no, you don't lose anything. You don't lose in this case. So this is not an attempt to convince young brahmacharis of the glories of Grihastha Ashram. But it is an attempt to let Grihasthas know that they have a very dignified and important role in serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And as far as that goes, that's about as much as I can say about this purport and verse for today. So if there's any comments, questions from the chilly audience, go ahead. Is Vishaka still here? She always has some question. Okay. That's it. Janardhan Prabhu. Oh, the Gandharva marriage. Well, no, Prabhupada talks about love marriage and a Gandharva marriage, and I didn't really know what he meant. Maybe it's described some other place what Gandharva marriage even means. I don't know. Oh, so they're eloping. Right. Okay. Okay, right. So Gandharva marriage is what in Western semantics is eloping. I don't know what the other term might be, where they agree to kidnap each other to just escape parents who don't understand the depth of their love, so they have to elope. This is also not recommended in Kali Yuga. Girls, no eloping. In practical life, speaking as a married man, no matter how nice the soulmates are, marriage requires constant attention and work, right? So, because sometimes soulmate implies that we're so perfect of a match that every day from now for through eternity we'll be happy with each other. I'll get to your question. So that's the soulmate, not myth. You know, there may be a karmic connection in the past with who you come to in this. Well, obviously there's a karmic connection why somebody would be with a particular personality. Now, the thing about seven lives, it becomes confusing for a Vaishnava because it may be because of his devotional service that his lives are finished. So it may supposed to have been seven and it's only three because we're getting out of material existence altogether. I was in a class where somebody asked Indrajumna Swami if when you go to the spiritual world, let's say that you don't renounce at the end of your life, you know, you die as a married couple. So in the spiritual world, are you still married? His answer was, I hope not. But he was speaking from, you know, sannyasi perspective. So, you know, in terms of the past connection between an individual and their current wife, we don't really know, you know, because we don't know our past life. There's not a lot of information in that regard that's available to us. And I don't know of any scriptural references that explain it. But we do know that in this life, that this is a person that is sent to me by Krishna to help me in Krishna consciousness. So what a friend. That's a real friend, right? Somebody who helps you in Krishna consciousness. So in that way, there becomes a mutual respect and honor that it's so rare in this world to find Vaishnavas at all. Would speak of somebody who's going to be an aid to going back to Godhead. That's all. As far as where you stand in terms of seven lifetimes with your soulmate, I don't have any insight on that, other than whatever lifetime it may be, the work is the same to assist each other to get back to Godhead, honor each other, and to raise Krishna conscious children. The work is the same. So, any young men available? No? Prabhupada said that all the ladies should be married and all the men should be single. Stay brahmachari. So this can create a little bit of a problem. One problem it does create, one actual problem, is that the men don't mentally prepare themselves for marriage. Right? This has been a problem in the past in the Hare Krishna movement, myself included. That I can specifically recall being brahmachari for about 5 years and thinking, okay, I can do this. And one experienced older grihasta at the time looked at me and said, there's no way you're going to be brahmachari for your life. So there's no preparation. So how to solve it? Because the people who come to Krishna consciousness, the young men, of course they want to be brahmachari. And the young women want to get married. So you solve it. It's not my problem. The thing is, though, to take it seriously. To take marriage responsibility seriously. That's all. You know, if a person is going to, it's a... there's conflicting instructions, right? It's earlier in this section, I think. Prabhupada describes the glorious fruits of a married life as beautiful children and how they bring so much happiness and so much gratification. You know, you just see a young parent with a new child, they just love the child. It becomes the focus of their lives. It creates a lot of happiness. And yet Prabhupada said, what is it now but just a list of names? Who cares? I had my sons, I had my daughters. Who cares now? It's just a fruitless glory. It's all over. So we have both things. But you can't take that mature perspective and try to start it from the very beginning, that I'm, you know, newly married and having children. Ah, it's a list of names. It's a fruitless glory. This is called, there's nothing advanced about that attitude. It's destructive, immature, and irresponsible. But at another stage of life, it's expected. You know, so Bhagavatam, it covers us from beginning to end. So we know, you know, wherever I am, this is the spiritual instruction for me. So we have some practical instructions here. When does it warm up? Not for another month or two. Okay. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Well, we have some very valuable insights, which a lot of people don't have. Most people, their concept of marriage and happiness is derived from magazines and movies. And it's wherein it's ridiculous concept of, you know, unending sense gratification. And that's what marriage is. So we have the privilege and the advantage of having this whole other concept that it's not a relationship of mutual exploitation for sense gratification. Prabhupada calls grihastha life a license for sense gratification. I think he even calls it a license for sex life. So a license means restriction, right? If you have a driver's license, it means there's restrictions on how to drive. So the whole idea of marriage is from the beginning in our scriptural Vaishnava understanding is that it's not meant for the movie magazine version of marriage. It's a whole different thing. It's all about, you know, there's this, everybody's here freezing just to take darshan and hear Bhagavatam, married, not married, child, you know. We had this whole different concept about, you know, what is marriage. And if we take that concept seriously, then we won't get confused by this other notion, the magazine movie notion. Thank you for being such a kind, attentive audience to the words of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Vyasadeva. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.